Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is the first of two-part conversation that I'm going to be releasing with Michael Crawford. Michael Crawford is a freelance writer. You can see his work most often at the Russell Street Report. And he does a lot of coverage of the Baltimore Ravens. So the first part of this conversation that I'm releasing is about a 30-minute long pod on the Baltimore Ravens offense. We'll talk about Lamar Jackson and his progress, Greg Roman's new role as the offensive coordinator, the Ravens' running game and passing game last year, in addition to what both Michael and I expect for next year with Jackson and the offense, including, you know, some of those new picks that the Ravens got, you know, just about almost a month ago now, and how they're going to impact this offense short-term and long-term. But I would also highly recommend you check out the second part of our podcast where we talk about the whole process of getting into seriously studying the game in terms of studying players and scheme and the things that Michael's learned, what I've learned, and just kind of going back and forth, comparing notes about, you know, that learning process. So if you're someone who's new to studying football, wants to study football more, I would really recommend this episode. Michael is just a really knowledgeable guy, a true student of the game, and someone who presents his information with a lot of knowledge and humility. And I particularly enjoyed this conversation. I think you will as well. But let's get started with Jackson and the Ravens and what we expect for the coming year. But I would like to know from you, I mean, what are your thoughts about the direction of this Ravens offense? What did you notice last year that you think you're going to see more of this year? What do you think is going to change this year with their additions of their wide receiving core and the addition of Justice Hill? You know, what are they going to play up more? And what do you expect out of Lamar Jackson this year that maybe we didn't see as much of this year or last year?
Well, with the offense, you know, with Greg Roman taking over as the offensive coordinator, you know, they let go of Marty Morningwig. Obviously, people have a variety of feelings about Marty. but Greg Roman was the run game coordinator there for the last couple of years. And, you know, obviously he's been an offensive coordinator and has worked with, you know, similar style quarterbacks to Lamar, whether it's Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo or even Kaepernick and Alex Smith. People only think about Kaepernick. They sometimes forget Alex Smith is sort of in that same spectrum, you know, in terms of mobile QBs who can also throw. So, you know, if you followed Greg Roman, you know he is committed to running the ball, right? So we're going to definitely see more running. I don't think, or at least I hope, that we don't see Lamar run as much as he ran last year. But some of that, though, I mean, I charted all of his snaps. I mean, I really tried to do a deep study on him last year, not just as a runner, but also as a passer. And one of the things that I came away with is, so a lot of it, I think, is tied into the play call. So if they're calling a zone read, a true zone read, where he really does have, it's not, you know, one of those things I mentioned before where it's a bluff, you know, from the very beginning, where he right. really has a read that he's making. He's reading a defensive end or even reading a defensive lineman or a linebacker. If, you know, they give him the look that tells him to pull the ball, you know, if that defensive end crashes down on the dive player, which is usually Gus Edwards or, you know, Kenneth Dixon in some cases, they give him that look, that's a pull read, and he's going to pull the ball and he's going to run it. Now, that obviously counts as a rushing attempt, but it wasn't necessarily a designed rushing attempt. I mean, it was in that there was always the option for him to run it. But I think when you look at the number of carries that he had in that 7 or 8 game span, which was historic, I mean, he carried the ball more than any quarterback in history in like a 7-8 game span. But you look at that and you say, okay, well, some of that, though, was not a truly, truly designed quarterback run. Is he had the option to do it. So I'm trying to kind of balance that when I think like, hey, I don't want this guy to, you know, get banged up and miss games. I mean, obviously he had to come out of a couple of games last year, but I think they'll probably do less of that per se and probably try to use it a little bit more selectively. But you'll continue to see the run game. I mean, Greg Roman loves you know, sort of those core concepts, power, counter. He mixes in a little bit of zone run. So I think you'll continue to see that. And I think with the additions that they made this year through the draft, you know, obviously the first thing that jumps out is speed. Clearly, you know, there was a goal to add more speed to the offense, which makes sense because when you think about how they want to play and how that can have a condensing effect right on the field. You know, if the defense thinks that you're going to run as much as they run, as much as they ran last year, you know, you get safeties that start to drop down, you get more guys in the box, and they can kind of have that condensing effect. Well, you know, there's a couple different ways that you can counter or attack that with speed. I mean, you can spread them out and align fast guys up wider and sort of attack them that way. You can continue to run the ball. But now when you have guys with the kind of speed that they brought in, whether it's Marquise Brown, Justice Hill, even Miles Boykin, who, you know, is a bigger guy but can still run, I think a lot of what worked for them last year was the eyes in the backfield, right? You have to watch Lamar. You have to watch all of the backfield action. You have to account for him as a run threat. And it's really about trying to force defenses to be disciplined and assignment sound for every snap throughout the game. I mean, that sounds kind of like, well, yeah, duh, don't they always do that? But
no, they don't.
They don't. And then particularly when you're facing that style of offense with, you know, so many run elements and run option elements and even, you know, pass option elements, all it takes is to get your eyes off of your key and on Lamar, right? And one misstep or one delayed step or one bad angle. And we saw that last year. But I think the difference with, you know, adding speed is, so now, you know, last year when that happened, you'd have Gus Edwards sort of exploit, you know, that misstep or that poor angle and, you know, 10, 15, 20 yard run. But if you can do that with a guy with Justice Hill, you know, now maybe you're talking about a touchdown run, a long touchdown run, right? Similar thing with Marquise Brown and Miles Boykin. If I can get a safety to have his eyes in the backfield and take, you know, maybe one or two false steps to read run or even just stop his feet. I mean, that's the one thing that I saw when I was watching Hollywood Brown at Oklahoma. If you take a poor angle or stop your feet, he's taking it to the house. I mean, that's just where it's going.
Slant plays, crossing routes, deep crossers, you know, dig routes, you know, those are all, and you think of, you know, whether it's Boykin or Brown, sneaking behind or just outside or inside the defender who's like, I have to account for Hill. I have to come up. I know that they're going to give it to Hill or they're going to give it to Ingram. Or there's Hollywood Brown working across the formation. They're going to pitch it to him. And now guess who's now breaking behind the safety? Is Miles Boykin with his 4.48 speed or whatever he has that he had that's and big enough that he's going to break a tackle if you don't have a good angle on him.
Yeah. And so I think you'll definitely see that. I just think that they stress the defense so much because all 11 guys have to be totally dialed in and, you know, really focused in on whatever their keys are on that individual play and not watching what Lamar is doing with the ball in the backfield or not watching the motion. Like you said, with maybe Hollywood Brown on some jet action or another play on jet action, you know, so you have to be really disciplined that way. But with respect to Lamar, I think you're going to see, and I've mentioned this to some people on Twitter because, you know, you get into these debates about what you saw from him last year. And, you know, I try to remind myself that it's not a static picture, right? Yes, you saw certain things last year, but a lot of the things that I saw were things that I think he did pretty consistently, but because they were such a low volume passing team, and I'm talking about things that he did well in the passing game as a passer, because they were such a low volume passing team, the sample size was small. But even in that small sample size, you could see a guy who saw the field well, who understood coverages in terms of strengths and weaknesses, who was willing to stay in the pocket and go through his progressions. You know, there's this misconception out there that he wants to pull it down and run at every chance that he gets, where I would say it was actually the contrary. I think that he would, and he did this more as the season went on, but he would look for opportunities to extend plays with still maintaining his focus downfield. So initially, I think it was, okay, I'm, you know, maybe feeling a little pressure or maybe not quite as comfortable in the pocket. And so I am going to try to get out. But he always keeps himself alive as a passer, right? And he's always sort of, you know, looking downfield for an opportunity to throw the ball. And I think that's kind of a misconception about him.
I would agree. And if you don't mind, let me just add a little story about this, if you don't mind, because a friend of mine is Russ Landy, who was a former scouting director for the Montreal Alouettes, a former NFL scout with a couple of teams, and who's done work with his own site, GM Junior, as well as NFL.com and the Sporting News. Used to be responsible for writing their scouting reports, both of those sites and publications. And when he watched Lamar Jackson, while he didn't have great grades for his accuracy, he said, "I was stunned when I first watched him at how good he was in the pocket, like just stunned, because the expectation I had from him being a guy who ran the ball a lot and what I saw from him early in his career, to see how well his pocket management and presence was, you know, I couldn't believe it. You know, it was so good." And so I think that when you have someone who's a former NFL scout who felt that way, I can see why people have mischaracterized him, because they just make assumptions as opposed to actually sitting down and studying it. Because when you study him, there is no doubt that this guy is just, he uses his speed and quickness at a level to be able to say, "I'm going to hang in here long enough, because I'm confident that if someone gets within like a 6 inches of me, I'm still going to be able to avoid them and be in position to throw."
Yeah, that actually is very reaffirming. Makes me feel a lot better, because I do follow Russ too on Twitter, and really, really respect his experience and opinion on that, and yours too. So that always makes you feel a little bit better when you feel like you saw something and other people who you respect have seen a similar thing. And to that last point that you just made, the thing that's exciting to me about that as a fan of Lamar is that he was still learning that last year and is still learning. I mean, he's just scratching the surface, and he acknowledged that in several post-game conferences, that these guys are a lot faster than I realized. Like, even the defensive lineman, you know, I thought, you know, I see this guy and I think, all right, I'm going to be able to get around the corner on this guy. Next thing I know, he's grabbing my foot and tripping me up. And so throughout the season, you could see him, you know, working through that process of how do I deploy my speed? How do I change speeds instead of, you know, I always kind of liken it to like a pitcher in baseball, right? The thing that can really help some guys who don't have like a 99 or 100 mile an hour fastball is having a good changeup, right? You see guys, whether it's Greg Maddux back in the day or J.B. Moyer or some of these other guys who didn't throw the ball real hard, but, you know, could throw like a 60 mile an hour changeup. So then when they did throw a fastball, it made their fastball, which was probably in the 80s, look like it was in the 90s because of how slow their changeup was. So I think you could see him working through that. And I remember a specific play in that week 17 Cleveland game where he's having to scramble out of the pocket to his right. And there's, I think it was a defensive back, might've been a safety, who's, you know, open and has an angle and a path to him. And, you know, earlier in the season, I think Lamar would have tried to just immediately try to get outside that guy and corner him. But, you know, as he's going through that learning process, you could see what he did was take a step or two towards him to bait him, then drift back, right? Invite that guy in to reduce his angle, and then go outside of him, you know? So you could see him sort of working through that in games and throughout the season, that, you know, obviously he's athletic, obviously he's fast and is a dynamic runner. And I think a lot of the misconceptions about him are due to that. He has such a dominant trait as a runner that you come to his game with all these preconceived notions. But like you said, then when you study him, you see a guy who is really good from the pocket, who works through progressions in a very disciplined way. And look, the accuracy thing, I think, you know, that has to be talked about. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. You know, there certainly is improvement to be made there. And I think a lot of it stems from his mechanics, particularly his footwork, sort of lower body footwork. And he acknowledged that. I mean, he's talked about that recently, that, you know, that's something that he really wanted to put a focus on over the offseason. Because, you know, it's like anything else, when you have done something a certain way for such a long time in terms of performance, and then you're in a stressful situation and, you know, you're taught new things, but then you're in a stressful situation, you're going to revert back to those comfortable behaviors. It's just, you know, we all do it. And so he talked about that. So I think you will probably see him, you know, improve in that area. But I also would expect that you'd see some regression at times, because I think that's just the natural sort of path of learning and of development. You know, it's not always going to be in a straight line. I think you're going to see some steps forward at times, maybe a lot of steps forward, but I think you may also see some steps backwards at times. And I think you have to just understand that that's part of the development curve, and that development curve is individualistic for every player. But I think the one thing that's pretty consistent about that curve is, like, it's not always going to be linear. You know, it's not always going to be in a straight line. So I think you just have to keep that in mind, that when you see some of those regressive kind of plays or performances, that, oh, you know, this is not a, you know, oh my Lord, the sky is falling. This is just, you know, this is part of that process.
I thought that was a great explanation of it. And I have a few points I want to make, and one thing I kind of want to run by you and see what you think of it. At first, I mean, when you think about the sack rate, because I know I've heard a lot of people talk about such a high sack rate, but I think people have to understand that if you as a quarterback had to make a living, and we'll call college football a living, even though we know that's not the, hasn't been the case, but if you've had to make a living in terms of your, you know, your playing career with your speed and quickness, and that you've always been the quickest guy, the fastest guy on the field, and that you've been able to be supremely confident about hanging in the pocket to the last second, you're going to have to recalibrate that in the NFL. When you go to that next level, you have to recalibrate that more than you did even going from high school to college. And so as a result, especially when you have an improvisational element to your game, doesn't mean you improvise all the time, but if you lean on it to a level where you, that's kind of your ace in the hole, you're going to have to recalibrate what works. And how you do that is you have to learn, you kind of have to push the envelope until the envelope tears. And you have to go back to the beginning and say, okay, this doesn't work anymore. I can't do this anymore in this league. These are things I can do. These are things I can't do. And the only way that can happen is through testing it. And if part of what you do is let defenders get as close to you as humanly possible before you make your move, well, you're going to take more sacks that way as you're trying to make that adjustment than you would if you were someone who generally anticipates when they're 2, 3, 4 steps away. So I think that's one part of it. I think what you talked about in terms of the mechanics makes perfect sense. There are going to be ups and downs with him, and he's probably always going to revert back to a certain kind of footwork and stance that may not be as, you know, helpful or as efficient for him as it could be, because he spent so many years learning that. But we've seen a lot of players who've performed very well with less than whatever people think ideal technique is. And again, with quarterback, body composition has a lot to do with that technique. So I'm not as concerned about that. One thing I would like to bounce off you is the idea, you know, that I've kind of noticed is, you know, certainly Greg Roman had the same run calls for Flacco, or like the blocking was the same under Flacco as it was for Jackson. It was just they ran more actual option plays with Jackson with that in line. They were kind of preparing for Jackson with the line scheme, but without using the actual full execution from the quarterback running back standpoint. What's your thought on that when they did make the transition from Flacco to Jackson? Is there a point to be made that the receivers and the quarterback didn't have the same kind of timing that Flacco and the receivers did? A, from the fact that they didn't get to practice together as much, you know, in terms of reps with the first team. But second of all, because of these different reads and option looks and performing some of these things where you're actually trying to draw the defense in with the potential for the run, that this also changed the timing between quarterback and receiver versus what Flacco and his receivers had.
I totally agree with both of those points. It was something that I thought about after the season as I was doing that charting of all of his snaps and sort of, you know, looking at some of the opportunities to connect with guys like John Brown or even, you know, Michael Crabtree at times. And that definitely stood out to me on both accounts. I think I'll speak to the first one in terms of just having that ability to work with those receivers in the same way, the same amount of time that Flacco did. Obviously, he didn't have that same amount of time. I mean, he came in, was it week 9 or week 10, right? And he's into the season where the kinds of things that you practice and work on in season are very different than, you know, to some extent, to what you would do in training camp and OTAs. I mean, you're game plan specific during the week. And I think you've talked about this before, that you're probably not going to have as much time to work on technique and some of the fundamentals, you know, midweek. I think obviously they always do some of that because, you know, they're trying to always sort of stay honed on some of that stuff. But you're not going to have maybe that same opportunity in terms of time that you would have had, you know, in training camp in the preseason. And he, you know, by and large, didn't get an opportunity to work with those guys as much because he wasn't the starter back then. And so, you know, one of the things that I think kind of sits over top of all of that is I think the Rams did a study a couple of years ago, like, you know, the amount of practices sort of pre the 2011 CBA and after the 2011 CBA. And I think their study showed it takes 3 years now to get the same number of practices a first year player would get in 1 year. And you can say, okay, well, yeah, that should affect everybody. And it does, right? It's not just quarterback and receiver, but I would argue that maybe outside of offensive line, I would definitely probably put them at number one, but the amount of time it takes to develop a rapport in terms of timing and chemistry and rhythm between a quarterback and receiver might be right there at number two. And, you know, how much time that can take. And so I definitely think that was an element. And then the second part that you mentioned, all of those plays, whether it was with Flacco or with Lamar, have a rhythm and a timing, a unique rhythm and timing and pace to them. And so when you switch to a quarterback like Lamar and you're adding those read elements, those option elements, that does have an effect on that timing and pacing of that play, right? And so even though they're practicing those plays, because I guess that could be the counter argument, is like, well, they're practicing those plays. So they're practicing that changed rhythm, that changed timing. Well, yeah, they are, but they're doing it in season in a situation where they were 4-5 when he came into the starting lineup, right? And they're trying to get themselves back in playoff contention. And so I think what you saw was sort of a condensed version of the passing game, intentionally condensed because of the way that they wanted to play and they felt that they could have some success. They felt like they could control the ball with the running game, obviously with the added threat of Lamar. You have to account for the quarterback.
Keep it low risk.
Yeah. Keep it low risk. Let your defense play. You know, you had a pretty good defense and you could always pretty much find yourself in the game and have a chance to win it at the end. I think you saw a little bit in that wild card game against the Chargers. And I know people will say, well, it was garbage time. Of course, that's why he was able to sort of throw the ball around and kind of make that a game at the end. But I disagree with that. Yeah, I disagree with that. I think that obviously the Chargers probably were playing a little bit softer in coverage for some of that time because they had a lead. Sure. But, you know, eventually things are tightening up, right? They see the scoreboard just like we do. And so I don't think you can say that you know, about every part of that fourth quarter. I think what you saw was, and, you know, a lot of Ravens fans kind of lamented this at times, is, you know, sort of took the limiter off of Lamar, for lack of a better word, and actually let him throw the ball. Yeah. And I think that when he had an opportunity to do that, he was able to show, you know, what he could do from the pocket, You also saw the improvisational ability. Obviously, that doesn't go away, but you saw some of the throws, like both touchdown throws, to Crabtree, the long one down the sideline, and even the short one, which was extend the play, sort of off script kind of play. But there were throws in that game, and I've tweeted out clips of these before, where there was a throw to Mark Andrews that a cornerback, made a great play on it. You have to give credit to the cornerback for being able to tip that throw, but for Lamar to start off his progression on the left side of the field to try to move the single high safety because he knows that he's got to get that guy out of there to open up Mark Andrews' route, and then to put that ball, to layer that ball over top of an underneath defender, but then in front of, get it over that defender, but then in front of the safety. I just think that you had an opportunity in that game, even in a loss and even in a game where he really started out with some struggles early on in terms of fumbles and turnovers and that kind of thing. I think I was much more optimistic about the future with him just overall, but even particularly as a passer because of some of the things I saw in that game.
Yeah, so was I. And to put a cap on this discussion, I mean, when you talked about, they were practicing these plays with Flacco and with Lamar, they've been practicing these plays all year. Well, imagine practicing, I say to you, okay, well, we're going to practice these three steps, A, B, and C, but, let's leave room for step F in between, B and C. We're not going to actually practice step F, but we're just going to acknowledge that F may be here while you're going between step B and step C. That's not really practicing it. That's just being aware and pretending that you're practicing it. And that's what happens if you're practicing with Joe Flacco and pretending, well, we're going to account for, we're also going to account for what Lamar will do when he's in the game. Because
and factor in the coverage.
Yeah.
Factor, so you're practicing that what if step, but now you're in the game and now that's not a what if. That is the step. We're adding these steps, but this isn't the same coverage that those receivers were facing in practice, right? This is different.
Yeah.
And so all of that affects the timing and the rhythm of those plays.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I've heard this before and I've watched these videos of like gun instructors talking about, how to handle a gun and in different situations. And one of those things was what happens if, God forbid, and I wish we could say this, but had so many school shootings, but when there's something that happens in public like this, they show how poorly prepared people who are gun owners can be in these situations, is even though that they may have what's considered an adequate amount of training in some circles, but police officers will often say you have to be training daily and monthly and to stay sharp. And even then, the adrenaline rush of somebody bursting into a room, you may never even get the gun out of your holster. You may never even get out of the line of fire before you even do that. And if you're practicing in a way we're saying, well, just let's just presume that you take the gun out of the holster and you're in the firing position. We're already in the firing position right now. Well, if you haven't practiced that simple step, then when the real thing happens, even though you've given lip service to it every week, you still haven't practiced it. So yep. You're going to be unprepared. It's the same way with these different types of routes and the different quarterback. Listen, I think just as a thing that I want to put a cap on is I think that, what you've discussed today and what we've kind of talked about at the end here is I'm with you. And I think that Lamar Jackson is probably one of the more underrated quarterbacks coming into this year in terms of, because of what the Ravens want to do, how they're going to emphasize that they're sticking. If anything, it seems to me they're sticking with their plan and scaling it up further and going to have a more prepared, practiced quarterback executing this than what they had before, even though the receivers will be new. And even though that will be an element that may have some ups and downs, as well as Jackson's development mental curve just as a second year player, I think that they've struck on something that worked. And I think they're just going to build on it.
Totally agree. I think it's a bit of a throwback, really, right? When you look around the rest of the league and sort of how some of the other prolific offenses want to play, certainly they run the ball, but I think only the Seahawks ran the ball more than the Ravens last year. And you see some similarities there too, right, with Russell Wilson and sort of how they want to play, how the Seahawks want to play. So it's a little bit of a throwback in a way, but I like that part of it. I think that, you know, people talk about that with the Patriots and Bill Belichick all the time, right? When the rest of the league is zigging, he zags. And so I kind of like the fact that they're, and plus, you know, like I mentioned before, obviously I like defense. So defense, the run game sort of just go together for me. So I'm personally a little biased about that. I'd love it if they ran the ball as much as they ran it last year or even more, just because I love that part of the game. But I'm also excited to see sort of that progression that Lamar can take as a passer. And I couldn't agree more that I think that, you know, there's still maybe a little bit of an underrated perspective to him because of what people saw last year. Again, I think there's that static component to thinking about this sometimes, because you're like, well, that's what I saw last, right? So that's what you're going to continue to see. But I don't think it is. I think we're going to see a more expansive Lamar Jackson as a passer from what we saw last year.
Well, I might have to, like, I may actually have to go to my basement and pull the Ed Reed jersey out of my chest of drawers here that I have hidden away that I haven't told anybody about, especially after this conversation, which was just excellent. Michael, you know, tell folks where they can find your work, and, you know, thank you so much for coming on. This was a blast.
Sure. Thank you again, Matt. I really appreciate it. Really enjoyed the conversation. You can find my work at RussellStreetReport.com. I did a series last year called Game Changers. So that's there, and from last year. And I hope to be continuing that series, or maybe even doing a little bit more this year. I also co-host a podcast. It's called the Film Study Podcast with Ken McCusick. That's available on iTunes and, you know, pretty much anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. And then I'm also, you know, try to stay active and engaged on Twitter. As you mentioned, I'm at Abukari, Abukari. And people always ask me, what does that have to do with your name? And I tell people, look, I was a history minor in college. So do yourself a favor and Google it and learn a little bit about pre-colonial African history.
Awesome. Well, listen, this was awesome. And again, folks, you can subscribe to the RSP cast on all the usual places, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, and, you know, the rest. We'll just put it that way. And the RSP post draft is out. If you're a fantasy player and you found this conversation as entertaining as we did, and as enlightening, you certainly will get a chance to find some stuff that's more results oriented, but it's grounded in the things that we talk about at mountwaldman.com is where you can download the RSP pre-draft and post-draft, and they come together in one package. And in June, that's when the newsletter starts coming out, from June through December, once a month. And you can check that out as well when you buy the RSP. And of course, you can just follow, you know, my work at Matt Waldman on Twitter or on my YouTube channel or through my site, www.mattwaldmanrsp.com. So we just gave you a ton of information, but, you know, that's the great part about this is you can rewind it and play it again if you missed something. Thanks again, and you guys have a good week.